2, we're looking at a transform of putting phases to correspond with dimensions. It's easy enough to master the arithmetic of four-dimensional space-time. One can do it simply by learning to count. And little children who learn to count learn at the same time their letters, their little song of A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and then they're counting. They're learning the line of the way in which phenomena can be characterized by their causal linking, and it does not occur to them while they're doing this that the space in between the numbers or the letters or expanded so that it's a little bit larger space in between the words made out of the letters, that is essential to their meaningfulness, to their phenomenality, to the way in which not only the perception and the conception occur, but that the matching of the conception and perception in experience also occurs. It's important for us in our consideration that this particular series be the 8th in a summation of a 2-year studies in the learning civilization group, and that it be the precis before the 1-year compressed education which will be offered in 2010. The previous education programs were all 2-year cycles, so that the 1-year presentation is a compression, and it is made available by the discovery, the realization, that one can present phases in pairs and that they will work just as well as the phases by themselves, as long as the pairedness is kept in a kind of a syncopated tuning. And that is that the first 2 phases are tunable with phase 3 and 4, and that phases 5 and 6 extend the tunability of 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 to a higher and a deeper axis, so that the ecology of consciousness becomes not an integral part of phase pairs, but becomes the transform of a pair of phase pairs in a higher order, and that this transform is the first of 2 transforms. That phases 7 and 8 then are a further expansion, a further heightening and deepening of what the phases 5 and 6 were able to do. Phases 7 and 8 extend, heighten, and deepen. And that once we have those 4 phases of the 4 dimensions of the natural cycle, and 4 phases of the dimensions of the ecology of differential consciousness, and we pair those 8 into a complex compressed quaternary, we then are able to look at a complementarity that has a bifurcated, bifocal is probably better, a bifocal quality, like Benjamin Franklin's inventions of bifocal glasses. With the lower part, you can read close up, and with the upper part, you can see farther away. And so the bifocals of making the eight into four pairs goes back also to the ancient wisdom tradition of the old Heliopolitan recension 5,000 years ago in Egypt, that the gods have not only four pairs like Isis and Osiris, but that ogdoad, that octave itself, has a ninth dimension, but that the dimension is neither phenomenal in space-time, nor is it in the ecology of consciousness, but both of those, the ecology and the cycle, brought together, disclose a ninth dimension, which is a process. The complementarity is a process, not a form. And that out of that ninth dimension will come a 10-dimensional hyperspace, which is not only a 10-dimensional hyperspace, it is a 10-dimensional transcendental time. It constitutes a third transform. The first transform is the transform of consciousness, able to be literally prismed by a person, a complex spirit person. The second transform is that the cosmos itself is able to help distill the ecology of consciousness so that the transformed prismed person now is participating in a harmonic ecology that brings all of nature in its transforms along with it, so that the transforms now become capable of having an ecology that operates like a ribbon within a ribbon, like a space within a space, like a quality of relationality of effervescence within the vectoring. So that when we talk about, for instance, a green ecology, we're talking not only something which is good for life, but of something which is quintessential many times over for reality. Our participation in the real is the way in which the maturation of our complementarity of consciousness and of nature is given its free play, so that the 10-dimensional hyperspace, as we will see, comes out fertile. And because it is fertile, it gives radiance to an 11 dimensions. And that 11-dimension field is the zero field of nature, which is why nature as a zero field is both empty and completely full. Full with fertility, because there is the ability for not only recycling and for an ecology, but for what was originally the infinity sign. In the earliest Egyptian iconography, the royal sign of the wisdom which the king must know, the pharaoh must know this, and the symbol for it was not only the king cobra, which lives in the wild to be more than 25 feet, 30 feet long, a very huge super snake. And when the king cobra stands upon its own coil, it begins to make a figure eight. And when the figure eights are accordioned out, one then has what the Egyptian hieroglyphs call living time. There was a beautiful book done by Dr. Maurice Nicole, who was one of the top Gurdjieffians in the world in his day, and edited the 5 volumes of commentaries on Gurdjieff, and wrote a series of interesting books, one called The New Man, and one actually called Living Time, where he has that ancient King Cobra Ogdoad multiplication. If you take one of those figure eights and lay it horizontally, then you get the origin of the infinity sign. And that infinity sign is not the circular snake swallowing its tail, but it is like a double, a cycle and an ecology brought together in an interpenetrating continuity where the inside and the outside are the same ribbon, like a Möbius strip. And because the inner and the outer are the same ribbon, that flat vector of the ribbon means that the time is not distinguishable between past and future, so that the entire shape continuously is what we would colloquially call the present. But because the present only is viable as an idea, as a symbolic structure of this moment in time, which is passing into the future and which has passed beyond the past, in infinity, there is no past and no future, because the present has triply transformed into presence. And so the ancient origins of the infinity sign is like a symbol, much refined, of presence. And that the presence occurs even magically out of chaos. We know, for instance, when chaos theory was first being explored along with fractals in the late 60s, early 70s. If you run a random chaos fast enough and long enough, it will develop a double butterfly attractor set. It will develop that infinity sign out of the speed of iteration and the duration of your running it, so that chaos itself is fertile for this kind of reality, the order of reality. Not a conceptual order, not a transcendental order, but of reality. We're looking at the way in which to approach this without getting ourselves into 40 or 50 years of studying the complexity of mathematical expression about the dimensions, so that we can now, hopefully in 1 year, at least in 2 years, I've offered 12 offerings of the 2 years, so there are 12 variants on that particular theme. Now in 2010, there'll be the 1 year program to give the compression of it in paired phase transforms. And that will be the title of that program, Paired Phase Transforms, which relates, like all of the other transforms, to being able to do a correspondence and a correlation with the higher mathematics of string theory, 11-dimensional string theory. Now look here. If time is the first dimension of phenomenality, and it courses in the zero field, the line, if it is contiguous, has no spacing, it has no viability in terms of its line, in terms of its vector. So it will naturally begin to conform to the field. And in that field, and when we looked at Michael Atea's writings, one of his observations taken from Einstein and developments, time-space curves, if it is considered contiguous. If it is not considered contiguous, if it has discrete unity elements to it, each of those elements will begin to show curvature. And so in a quantum mathematic, the oneness is always punctuated by the zeros, which means that the ones are quantized. The relativity is of the continuousness of the timeline, the continuousness of the world line in quantum theory. It is the discontinuous quanta that occur, and one has to take all of the zeros into consideration so that the line now is minutely at its most analytically small little bits of line that each one curve and they become the strings. So the 11th dimension in string theory is that the form of hyperspace will yield a new quality of dimensionality for our ability now to do a special kind of a math which could not be done before. Without a five-dimensional conscious visioning, which in math is called a theory, without a theory, one cannot enter into higher problems than just counting, higher cardinalities or ordinalities than the simple arithmetic, adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, commutating. As soon as you bring a theoretical capability, which is an extra dimension, into play, one now begins to have a different quality, a function analyzing quality that links geometry to number. And the geometry transforms into a trigonometry. And number now translates into different ratios of numbers, different proportions of numbers. And so a trigonometric ratioing becomes characterizing of functions within a spherical space which is expandable indefinitely. And within that sphericality, one can isolate initially a plane. And the plane will have an ability to have a horizontal line and a vertical line, and one can deal with the geometry in one quarter of that circle. And that angle will then give you the ability to compute trigonometrically the functions of angles, of relationalities, and what comes out of it is the kind of math that you did not ever have before in any arithmetic function. You have coefficients of being able to mathematize the functionings. And one can carry this extremely far. In fact, we know that by the time of about the 8th century AD in our history, in China, the Taoist monasteries developed differential and integral calculus, but they did not use it in an application like mathematics to a science. They used it as meditation techniques. The first person to discover this and characterize this was Joseph Needham, the master of Caius College, Gonville at Cambridge University, and his 20-volume series, Science and Civilization in China. He went there in the late 20s and in the 1930s, and he's the one who did the original investigations and collections of material and developed at Cambridge an enormous group of talented people, and over the last 50, 60 years has published all these great huge tomes on science and civilization in China, and was the first one to discover the development of calculus in Tang China, but never was put into an application. It took until the 17th century, till the late 1600s, for it to be rediscovered, and was rediscovered at the very same time by two individuals, Sir Isaac Newton and Gottfried Leibniz. The way that Leibniz came to it was through the Chinese. He was 20 years old. He was visiting a Jewish savant named Spinoza in Holland. And Spinoza, who had been exiled from the Jewish community because he had some very heretical visions and understandings of God, including an infinity that rather transcended by many orders the Torah limitations, not very persona grata, the Jewish community in Holland at the time. He knew Dutch traders who were doing business in Indonesia, because the Dutch were very big in Indonesia. And Indonesia at the time was very much a part of Chinese trade milieu, sphere of influence. And so some Jesuits who went along with the Dutch went into China, and they were interested in getting the take on Chinese religion and philosophy and background preparatory to carrying the Jesuit message to China, let's Christianize them. They brought back the first I Ching to ever be brought to Europe. And because they were Jesuits and well-trained to know languages well enough to translate them, they translated the I Ching into Latin, which Leibniz and Spinoza could both read. And when they were together, talking over intensely, Leibniz understood that Spinoza had opened up more dimensions than what had previously been used in the coteries, very advanced at the time, but nevertheless, the coteries in Germany that Leibniz was with were dwarfed by Spinoza, who was really colossal. And so at the age of about 21, Leibniz wrote his first monograph on the natural development of the Chinese. And out of that, eventually, he developed his own calculus. Because the Taoist development of calculus was by that time implicit in the way in which the I Ching was understood and expressed. The reason being is that the great Neo-Confucian movement sought to bring Taoism and Confucianism together with a kind of a Buddhist overlay. And after about 500 years, there arose a really universal genius in China named Wang Yangming. And he's the one who figured out how to develop without having to go through the mathematics of the complications of calculus, how to be able to understand the transform in dimensions in terms of conscious refinement and sophistication by a yoga. Wang Yangming came about 500 years before my efforts, and I'm like a refinement of Wang Yangming and his development. There is specifically a difference between Leibniz's notation of calculus and Newton's. We use today Leibniz's notation of calculus. though we all applaud Sir Isaac Newton because his Principia Mathematica was the first time that a complete, not just a monograph, but and not just a treatise, but an entire investigation. Newton was anything if not absolutely careful of taking care of every single possible aspect. And when he released it in 1687, as we talked earlier, it produced a tsunami invisibly in the way in which symbolic structures not were, but in which they, if I can use this metaphor, by the way in which they rippled. The first persons to notice this rippling effect were in England, and they were not mathematicians, they were poets. And they began to see in ripple wave effects, like being able to see heat waves, that the phenomenal world was penetrated by other energies that under normal conditions you could not see, but nevertheless must be there all the time, and so must be taken into consideration. And so the first kinds of Newtonian mechanics that were operated with, it's called thermodynamics, the wave energies of heat. Incidentally, one of the earliest developments of thermodynamics of heat was in ancient India. And one finds it already 300 BC in the Mahabharata. Yogic heat is a conscious dimension of energy that goes into healing, goes into resuscitation of one's capacity to not only heal back into health, but to heal the rhythms of the iteration of the particality of the atoms, of the molecules. And one of the time venerable acid tests of this was developed by Milarepa. His monastery was Mount Everest. And on the slopes of Everest in the winter, it can get very, very cold. And to prove that you were able to generate the tumul, which is the Tibetan word for the psychic energy of the psychophysical body, a woven cotton gown was dipped into ice water and put on you. And you would have to, by your generation of tumul, dry out the cotton in the winter air. And so the name Milarepa means literally in Tibetan, cotton clad. If you can dry out your clothes by your psychophysical heat, you have not only integrated the dimensions of those invisible waves into nature, but you have complemented them so that your consciousness now plays with the natural dimensions. And when it can play, it can create. And so consciousness on a very high yogic level, the level of Wang Yang Meng 500 years after Milarepa, is extremely sophisticated. And this work coming 500 years after that is plenty interesting, to give it a phrase. We're looking at the way to recut the shapes of symbolic structures. And the first one we're going to recut is the New Testament. There is no more higher refined document that has been messed with professionally longer than the New Testament. It is encrusted with scrambles. And it's time to put it into the crucible of transformation and bring it back so all the dross is burned off and it leaves the gold alone. And we will find that recutting the New Testament is the first step in the Parayana. As we talked about earlier, the historical Buddha found the method, the technique, by which to sink the deeper penetration into the zero field of nature. 500 years later, Jesus, with Mary Magdalene, found a way to raise that transform into the infinite field of differential consciousness. And in doing so, an axial achievement came into play. And the first thing that happens when that comes into play is that the second dimension of space, the vertical, the height, is the third dimension of space. The second dimension of space is the breadth, the width. And the breadth, the width, is the plane generated by the line of the first dimension of time. So that the first dimension of space is the expansion of the line to the plane. One of abstract art's greatest early 20th century books by Wassily Kandinsky was called Point to Line to Plane. It was a textbook for the Bauhaus, and it was a sequel to his original Concerning the Spiritual and Art. Point, line, to plane. What happens in the second dimension of space, in the breadth, is that the line is expanded so that the line now generates a plane. And when that verticality of the third dimension of space has contact with the zero field of nature and the infinite field of differential consciousness, integral zero, differential infinity, the expansion transforms a present point into a tuned pair of the future and the new past. That as you move either into the past newly, it will generate a future. Or if you move into a future vision, it will modify and refine the past into a new past. So that they occur as a tuned pair. And the farther one goes into a future, or the farther one goes into a past, the more now the dimensionality of time is expanded, but expanded in a tunable, paired way. And if one knows how to take the tuned pairs in a tuning set, one can, like tuning a piano, tune the instrument that makes those tuned pairs into octaves that are expandable into more octaves that are related in a harmonic. So that the musical instrument that we're working at here is the spiritual person. We want to retune your middle C octave and then expand it so that you have 11 of them like a piano, and you will be able to make music that you could not have made before. Instead of just whistling, you can now do a Mozart sonata, or you can do a John Adams composition, or a Dave Brubeck riff, whatever you want to play, you will have an instrument that can make a music of everything from sonatas to jazz and beyond. You can become an Elton John of your person. What it takes is a regularity. It's like a yoga. And that this regularity is not a cycling. It's not a once every Saturday morning, but it is a double spiraling. It goes deeper and higher at the same time because the height restriction is taken out of its limitations and taken even out of the idea of an unlimited. The idea of an unlimited is a subtle limitation, because the unlimited as an idea is an opposite to the limited. The pairs of opposites do not tune, they polarize. So when you look at the contemporary of the historical Buddha, when you look at Pythagoras, or you look at Lao Tzu, or another contemporary of theirs, when you look at Ezekiel, they're all contemporaries. And in fact, the re-renaissancing of ancient Zarathustra as Zoroaster is contemporaneous with them. All five of them occur at the same time threshold, because it's a time form of moving away from the old, which was 500 years back to 1000 BC, to the new, which will now be this 500 years to 500 years in the future. And if you look at all of them, Zoroaster, Ezekiel, Pythagoras, Lao Tzu, the historical Buddha, you find there a way to not try to grasp opposites in the same set. Because opposites in the same set, if tried to be grasped, will produce knots automatically. You'll have to look at the first part of today's presentation to get the full oomph of that. The most pristine way that it was expressed at the time was a confrere of Pythagoras named Parmenides. His mystical poem called The Way of Truth. He looked like a William Blake divine figure, long white hair, long white beard, long white linen robes. What is, and what isn't. They never meet. They are not opposites. The mind is using a fiction for formulating its structure of ideas. And instead of having ideas which are resonant with theory, visionary forms, the ideas are projections of presumptions of the mind. They do not go into consciousness. They go back through experience to manipulating the existential things and the existential actions. And manipulated actions now produce something radioactive. They produce karma. The manipulated things now produce something that originally they were not naturally going to do. They produce poisons. Poisoning nature and karmaizing actions are the results of a miscivilization, of a retrospective ignorance, and nothing is more important in our time to get the ecology of consciousness working again ecologically and have it in complementarity with nature in its cycle. That's what all this is about. More next week.